The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Advice and expertise on the relief you need from hay fever at All Care Community Pharmacies across Ireland.
And now for the best picks of movies and TV for the week, I'm joined in studio by Jen Gannon, freelance pop culture journalist, and also by John McGuire, film critic and journalist with the Business Post. Guys, you're very welcome. Jen, will we kick off with Together on BBC Two on Thursday at 9 o'clock? Sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Sharon Horgan.
It's Sharon Horgan and James McAvoy. And I think, you know, right now at this time in arts and culture, we're trying to kind of respond to the pandemic. And it's, you know, success and failure, there's varying degrees of it. And I'm kind of excited about what this will look like because it's by the writer Dennis Kelly, and he was responsible for the original Utopia, which was just fantastic. And also the really weird Jude Law drama from last year called The Third Day.
Yeah.
And he also did Pullin with Sharon Horgan, which is just a superior singleton comedy. I can't recommend that enough. But so this is him reuniting with Sharon Horgan and James McAvoy, and they're playing a struggling couple who basically are quietly hating each other for a very long time, and they've discovered during lockdown that they actually have to communicate with each other. Their whole relationship is devolving, and it's just really surviving with their 10-year-old son. So it's kind of a deep look at what I'd say a lot of people would find relatable from their own lockdown experiences.
Yes, let's say it will be pretty
okay. Acerbic, I'd say, knowing Dennis Kelly.
Okay, so that's BBC Two Thursday at Together. John, Loki on Disney Plus. On one hand, I'm thinking, oh, it's Marvel-like. On the other hand, I'm thinking it has Owen Wilson, who's always watchable.
Always worth
what's it like?
Like yourself, Brendan, I lost all interest in the Marvel Comics universe some time ago, about halfway through the 23 films in this franchise. I've watched them all, but I can't remember any of them. But I have always admired Tom Hiddleston's sprightly, sarcastic take on Loki, the Norse god of mischief, the inseparable antagonist to his brother Thor. And over the course of the films, Loki evolved from the sympathetic villain into a selfless, kind of doomed anti-hero. And that's an arc you can really only execute if you have an actor who plays manipulative and egomaniacal as likably as Hiddleston does. And this is a Disney Plus spin-off. Almost everything is getting a spin-off now. The Star Wars stuff is gone. There's loads of Star Wars coming. Marvel has done a few of them, WandaVision in particular. This is Loki in the first episode, separated from all the things we know about him. The brother, the rest of the Avengers, his costume, his godlike superpowers, through circumstances that I'm not going to explain. All of these things are stripped away from him, and you're just left with Hiddleston and, like you say, Owen Wilson.
And is it kind of meta the way WandaVision
meta,
is?
Meta doesn't even come in.
Okay,
it is super meta. It's meta.
Okay, all right. Well
it's
then,
beyond meta. Because and interestingly, they're dealing with time. I only got to watch the first episode. I will watch more of it because it's really clever
and really
smart. And Hiddleston is superb.
And listen, they're dropping this an episode every Wednesday. Apple TV and some of the other streamers are starting to act like television channels, aren't they?
I think that there are certain properties that don't suit binging. And the temptation to sit and binge watch 8 episodes of Loki or whatever it might be of the Star Wars, the Mandalorian, like Disney Plus did with the Mandalorian. They separate them out, they spread it out. It gives them a season, which is great. They get, you know, 2 months out of it instead of 8 straight hours.
Yeah.
And
so people aren't just talking about it for a day.
Precisely.
Watch it and then
precisely.
Move on. Yeah, yeah. Jen, speaking of episodic stuff now, people might have missed the first episode of Time, but they could catch up tonight with the second one. It's on BBC One at 9 p.m. And this is, it's Jimmy McGovern is bleak.
Yeah, well, it's Jimmy McGovern, so you know it's going to be bleak, hardcore, social realist drama. But, you know, it's Stephen Graham. I just think he's such a masterful actor. He was in The Virtues, he was in This Is England, and it's him and Sean Bean, who I think Sean Bean is just growing as just a great character actor. And I think once he's away from the dragons, away from shouting at dragons and in more kind of realistic stuff, he's absolutely brilliant. He was great in Red Riding, and it's really a two-hander. And I just think that Jimmy McGovern has this way of getting great performances out of actors like Shane Meadows, and it's, you know, it's going to be hardcore, but it's really compelling. So it's about, Sean Bean plays a teacher, Mark Hebden, who has been sentenced to 4 years in prison for drink driving, where he kills a cyclist accidentally. And he is really consumed by guilt over his actions, and he accepts his sentence with open arms. He's ready to, you know, pay penance. But then he has no idea what prison is going to be like, and he has to really hit the ground running with this new environment. And then you have Stephen Graham is playing Eric McNally. He is a prison guard or prison warden, and he ends up in this terrible position where his son is in a different prison, and the inmates, you know, get wind of this and they're going to use it to their advantage. So it's just gritty material. It's not your fluffy Sunday night viewing, but it is really compelling and it will keep you hooked.
So worth catching up with. Now, you've both picked Lupin Series 2 on Netflix. John, will you tell us about that? I didn't even watch one.
Oh, you should watch one. Really, but this is very good. This is Lupin is Netflix surprise hit crime series. It was credited by the Netflix chief executive as the show that broke the subtitle barrier in the US that got American audiences reading the movie, if you know what I mean. And it picks up where we left off on the cliffhanger of suspense. Assane Diop, who's played by Omar Sy, brilliantly played by Omar Sy, he's an incredibly stylish, statuesque actor. He's really, really good in this. And he's a modern-day gentleman burglar who's fashioned his career as a master criminal after Maurice LeBlanc's character, Lupin, famous character. And as LeBlanc in 1900 wrote the Lupin series as an answer to Sherlock Holmes, you could see Lupin, the TV show, as an answer to the Benedict Cumberbatch Sherlock Holmes. It's very stylized. It's very stylish. It's very clever. It worked. The stories tend to work together like clockwork. The gears are very finely tuned. And it's fun to watch. In as much as it is, Sy is very well supported by, in particular, the character who plays his wife, who's played by, I can't recall her name right now, just off the top of my head, Virginie Le Doyen, is it? No?
Oh, yeah. No, it is, actually, yeah.
Anyway, she's superb as well. Okay. And this story continues on with their battle against Pellegrini, who's this very highly powered, very wealthy Parisian mover and shaker.
Okay, so
Sy, of course, comes from the banlieue. And the story retains the same thread, but the theme of the story, the wealth gap in France, their experience of racism, the experience of immigration.
Okay, so gritty
that's
enough,
what
like,
it's about.
Yeah. Yes, okay,
that's
okay.
What the
and there's two
really
seasons
about.
Of that there. There
two seasons,
people,
plenty
and
to be enjoyed.
You're highly recommending it. Okay, listen, guys, I have to take a quick break that I should have taken earlier, so just bear with me a minute. We'll take that break now.
Email brendan@rte.ie.
Our entertainment panel, Jennifer Gannon and John McGuire, still with us. So what, 105 minutes we got without having to issue an apology. John McGuire, issued your apology.
Ludivine Sagnier, the fine French actress whose name I just mistook there. She plays the character, Lupin's wife and mother of their child.
And she was on very quickly to clarify that there, wasn't she? I thought she listened afterwards on podcast.
Sorry, Ludivine.
Jen, tell me about Physical, this coming to Apple TV next Friday, is it? We have Rose Byrne, who's great. I'd watch Rose Byrne.
Rose Byrne is amazing. Like, I think, you know, she can do anything she turns her hand to, from like Bridesmaid, straight comedy, to like she was on stage in Medea. Like, she's just fab. But I really love her in comedy, so I'm delighted. She's going to be the star of this very, very dark comedy. And she's this San Diego housewife, and she's filled with real self-hatred, and it's all her internal monologue. And she has this deadbeat husband and has a terrible disorder about her self-image, but she finds salvation and an outlet through this Jane Fonda type workout. So it's set in the 1980s, and she starts these exercise classes with real venom, and she's videotaping herself for this business. And it's all about that pursuit of outward perfection, that I think your internal life can be a mess. And it's very much like kind of keying into the Instagram age
that's
that we're into.
That's the world we're in now,
and it's directed by Itania's Craig Gillespie, who also did Cruella recently. So it's got that very kind of pop culture, you know, darkly funny style to it. And it's like, if you liked Dirty John, Betty Broderick, that story that was on Netflix, you're going to like this. It's very similar in tone.
Okay. Apple TV are starting to do some good.
I
thought Mosquito Coast kind of picked up after they got to Mexico and everything. I kind of really got into it.
And then
the morning show is really,
fab.
Really good.
Superb documentary on Apple TV at the moment from Asif Capid of 1971, The Year That Changed Music. That's a superb documentary series. Really excellent.
Okay. So, we could be seeing the growth of a viable streamer there. John, in the meantime, for people who want to get out of the house, the cinemas are back, and I suppose for a lot of people it will be a chance to see The Father.
The Father is the big one. It's all about the big screen experience this week, because in many cinemas across the country have reopened. The IFI, certain numbers of the chains, or are preparing to reopen. They're programming films that audiences might have missed, like Wolfwalkers or Nomadland, Emma Reynolds' documentary about Phil Lynott's Songs for While I'm Away, that's been programmed as well.
Okay.
Alongside new releases like The Father, which is Anthony Hopkins, who was the surprise winner of the Best Actor at the Oscars back in April, and with the late Chadwick Boseman, The Dogs in the Street said Chadwick was going to win it. Hopkins ended up winning it. Now, having seen this film subsequently, I can't imagine it was even close, because Hopkins is just extraordinary here. It's an exceptional performance. He's electric in every scene of this. French opera director and librettist and novelist and kind of meta, every polymath, every man, yeah. Florian Zeller. It's his documentary film, his debut film, excuse me. And Hopkins plays Anthony, an elderly Londoner with encroaching dementia. He's losing things, he's forgetting things, he's having difficulty keeping track of the difference between his memories and the reality of what's happening in front of him. He's confusing characters, he's confusing the house that he lives in, he's confusing his daughter Anne, played by Olivia Colman, with other people in his life over the last 80 years or so. And Zeller brings us into Anthony's perceptions. He brings us into his mind as he's experiencing these things. It's absolutely beautifully written. He won the best Oscar for best adapted screenplay. This was his own play, his own stage play. And as we go through the film, we're so absolutely precise in every point that we're at in the story, yet it's still a maze for us and a labyrinth. And it the emotion that Hopkins is able to put across, he turns on a sixpence in almost every scene. He's elated, he's happy, he's joyful, he's drinking whiskey, he's tap dancing, or he's in the depths of despair and confusion, all with sometimes within the same scene. And it's really extraordinary to an extraordinary film to watch.
Okay,
now Hopkins and Coleman got all the attention, but the secondary cast is exceptional as well. Mark Gatiss, Olivia Williams, Imogen Poots, Rufus Sewell. They're all really superb. And it's one of the, if you want to get out to the cinema and you're prepared for it, because it is a difficult and a heartbreaking film, this is the one, a prestige movie that you want to go and see.
Yeah. Okay, right. That's quite a recommendation. And on a kind of a very different note, we briefly mentioned A Quiet Place 2 last week. But I know that that will be a lot of people's first trip back to the cinema, and the reviews have been superb.
Yeah, this is it's all about that big screen experience. What you're looking for is suspense, adrenaline, heartbreak and emotion. All of these kind of things are uniquely amplified by experiencing them from a cinema seat. I love watching movies at home, don't get me wrong. I like to sit there in my pajamas and watch the movies, no problem. But it is such a different experience in the big screen. And that's where A Quiet Place does so well, because it's a film really more about silence than it is about noise. It's a sci-fi thriller, an action movie, really, the sequel to the 2018 surprise smash hit, but that has the same aliens who are blind and who only respond to sound. They're full of teeth and claws, and they're here for some unknown reason, nothing is explained, to eradicate humanity. There's a suggestion that they might be some kind of futuristic bioweapon from space. But anyway, that doesn't...
And it sounds much sillier than it is, actually.
I know, yeah, when you explain these things...
It is quite adult.
It's much different when you're sitting there in the dark and the big monster is coming. It's a different story.
Exactly.
It's a different story.
Jen, for people who aren't going to get out to the cinema, you have a couple of good TV films for us, and you do love a good rom-com, don't you, Jen?
So,
Crazy Stupid Love.
Yeah, so this is on RT1 on Wednesday at about 25 to 10, and you know, a lot of people know this as the shirtless Ryan Gosling Dirty Dancing film. Well, that's what I know.
Maybe that's just you.
That's an impenetrable image. So it's basically a multi-generational rom-com, and the basic premise revolves around Steve Carell's character Cal, who was really happily married to his wife Emily, who's played by Julianne Moore, but she wants to get a divorce, and they've been married for about 30 years, and he's absolutely devastated. So working into that, he meets Ryan Gosling's character at a bar.
Oh, I've seen this. It's really good, very fun.
It's written by the This Is Us helmer Dan Fogelman, and he knows how to do that rom-com kind of syrupiness and pull at your heartstrings. But for me, the best character in it is Marissa Tomei. I always think she's underused in everything, but she is this brilliant, very erratic teacher that Steve Carell ends up going on a date with, and she's just brilliant in it. It's just a fun watch. It's a really good, tightly wound rom-com.
Yeah, and we all need that now and again. And then something maybe a little bit more quality, people might say, is Florence Foster Jenkins on BBC Four on Thursday at 8 p.m.
Yeah, I just think this is an absolute delight. Florence Foster Jenkins was this really wealthy grand dame and patron of the arts, and she really notoriously deluded herself into thinking she was this very talented soprano, and she warbled like off-key in these excruciating private concerts to all her beneficiaries. libraries. And then she decided to book herself into Carnegie Hall. And that's when the private became public. And what was a private joke suddenly became like the Emperor's new clothes. And it's just a really charming film. And I think Hugh Grant is so good in it as her very indulgent partner, Sinclair. But like, obviously, it's Meryl Streep's film. And she's a joy to watch. And you feel, you know, that little bit of pain of vulnerability about her. And you almost feel protective of her yourself when you're watching it. And I don't know how she does it, because in someone else's hands, she could just look like a very selfish, you know, posh old biddy.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Meryl makes you feel for her. And that's why she's the best.
Of course she does. That's why she's Meryl. So that's Florence Foster Jenkins, BBC Four, on Thursday at 8. Now, we did also ask you both, because we talked about, actually, it was This Is Us came up last week. And a lot of people said it was great to get a tip off on a series that I hadn't seen, that there was loads of it there for me to get stuck into. So we did ask you both for a binge watch, and that not necessarily a new thing. John, you're saying Ozark. Netflix, which
exceptional. This is a crooked financial advisor, Marty Bird, played by Jason Bateman, who also was involved in the creation of this, and he writes a lot of the scripts and directs a few of the episodes. He drags his wife Wendy, played by Laura Linney, on full bore. She's exceptional in this, and they're two kids from Chicago to the Missouri Ozarks, which is this like rural summer resort community built around a lake. Marty has to launder $500 million of drug cartel money in 5 years, or they'll kill him and the family. And that dramatic tension in that, and this gritty series derives from Marty and the Lady Macbeth, Laura Linney's character, coming up with schemes to wash the money. And the fact that the hammer could fall on them at any time.
And again, sounds a bit ridiculous, but when you're in it,
tense.
It is almost Shakespearean.
The tension is incredible.
Like,
It's not just, it's one of my favourite shows, and it has been from episode one, season one. I love the cast. I love the way it's made. I love the darkness and the black humour of it, and the tension of it. And
the whole setting
said,
and the texture of the place as well, and everything.
And
all of the stuff
that they talk about in terms of American capitalism and all of that, and American social structures and all that kind of stuff is exceptional.
And three seasons of that.
Three seasons. They're currently filming season four. I can't wait to see it. But Ozark, it's on Netflix.
Jen, you've gone for the big one. You rewatch Mad Men recently?
Rewatch Mad Men for the whole of my entire life. I love it so much. I think it's one of the greatest, most well-written shows ever produced. And so it moved from Netflix onto Amazon. So if you have your Amazon there, use it to watch Mad Men. can be done. But I just think in lockdown...
Did it? You know, some things that were even only a short time ago can suddenly have dated really badly in the world we live in. Now and everything. Yeah. Does Mad Men suffer from that at all?
Well, because it's in the 60s, so you're already like set back in time, so it's actually okay. It hadn't aged badly, and I think the way it is, because of the backdrop of the chaos of the 60s with the civil rights movement and the women's movement and Vietnam and serial killers and cults, all that fear kind of is swirling in the background of Mad Men. And that's why I found it so comforting to watch during lockdown, because I was like, they've made it through all this unrest virtually unscathed. Maybe we're going to be okay.
You're right. Absolutely. God, I might go for Mad Men again. Okay, listen, thanks a million, John McGuire and Jen Gannon.